This will be your first time at the monastery. I'd be happy to show you around.
It really is Fodlan in a nutshell. The good and the bad.
Like it or not, we'll be there soon enough.
What's up? Welcome to NExpress, the Nintendo show of GoombaStomp.com. I am one of your hosts, Tim Mason. Here with me, I've got Patrick Murphy.
What's up, Tim? It's cold here in Minnesota. I hope it's a little bit better out there in the West Coast for you.
The mild Pacific Northwest? Yeah, it's about 50.
That's right.
Not too bad.
Yeah, I would take that, even with rain.
Yep, it's a great place to live, and it doesn't rain as much as people say, so check out Seattle, guys. Or don't, you know, we're overpopulated as it is. We've also got Ricky D here.
What's up, Tim Mason? What's up, Nintendo Nation? It is -3 in Montreal.
Wait, you say -3, but you're Celsius. Talking like a crazy person. Yeah, Rick's nuts.
Yeah, I don't know what that is for you guys in the U.S. -3 is not bad. Like, usually it's -20 in Montreal. So it's just a tad below zero. So you can, like, you can walk out and, you know, you won't need gloves or a hat or a scarf. You could just, you know, wear shoes and a jacket.
Yeah, what is that? What is that here? That would be like, what, 25 degrees?
I would say it's in the 20s somewhere, maybe low.
Something like that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would like the lower 20s right about now. I would take that.
Yeah, you live in the part of the U.S. that is hitting negatives in Fahrenheit, which is real dang cold.
Yeah, I think one of our towns the other night was -17 Fahrenheit.
Oh, gross. Just literally biting when you go outside. It hurts.
Yep. Your nose freezes instantly.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's like, it's one of those things where if the wind is blowing, they advise people that, like, within 5 minutes you can have
frostbite.
Yeah, frostbite.
You know what else is really cold? All of the Twitter feedback about the Video Game Awards. Man, people are harsh.
Feel like the coldest climate of all climates is
Twitter.
The gamer social media climate at any given moment. Regarding any goddamn thing. I don't care what it is.
But we're going to talk about this, right? We're going to talk about the Video Game Awards?
Yeah, this week we are talking all about awards and praises and rankings. This week we're talking about the Video Game Awards 2019, and we're also going to talk about the best games of 2019, according to people who actually know what they're talking about, the folks at GoombaStomp.com. So that should be a lot of fun. We'll save that for our main event. But we do have to talk about the Video Game Awards. There were some good announcements, some regarding Nintendo Switch. There were some awards given, some awards that weren't given that should have been. I don't know how you guys are feeling about the entirety of the award ceremony, but this is about as much enthusiasm as I can muster for it. How did you feel about the awards? Do you want to break it up into awards and announcements, or do you want to just everything all together?
Well, I think that's the problem. I think the problem with the Video Game Award show is that it really isn't an award show. And I think that's the biggest problem of the award show is they spend more than 50% of the program previewing games that are going to be released in the future. And like the whole point of an award show is you're supposed to reflect back on the past year. And in the case of the Video Game Awards, you're supposed to pay honor to the developers and the people that worked really hard on the very best video games released over the past 12 months. It's like you watch the Academy Awards, you watch the Grammys, you watch the Golden Globes, and it's about the movies or the music that was released in, you know, over the past year, right? And the problem with the Video Game Awards is there's so much hype, not so much about the awards, but about what trailer are we going to see? What video game is going to be announced? And that's the problem with the award show, and I kind of feel bad for Jeff Keighley, but at the same time, it's his fault because it is his show. He programs it, he coordinates it, he does everything. Like, it's his decisions. But what he does each and every single year, he goes to Twitter and he asks everybody for feedback, and he's always asking people for feedback. And he needs to stop asking people for feedback because most people do not know what they want. And most of the time, the people he's asking aren't people that care about an award show. You, no matter what you do, they will never be happy with an award show because award shows are usually boring, okay? And so you have this show in which people are disappointed because there wasn't enough Nintendo Switch announcements. There wasn't enough world premieres. There wasn't enough trailers of video games that are going to get released next year. There wasn't enough information about the new Xbox console. There was no information about the PlayStation 5. Do you see where I'm going here? Like, none of that has to do with the past 12 months of the video game industry. This is an award show. And so what they did was they handed out like 3 to 4 awards at a time within a span of like 1 minute, right? Just handing out awards like super fast. And then they spent about 10 minutes previewing the new Xbox machine or the new Final Fantasy game. And I actually think I wrote an article about the Video Game Awards this year and the 10 best moments. And I actually think the show was pretty good because people were complaining about the pacing. And I'm like, dude, the show was less than 3 hours long. Most award shows, they're like 5 hours long. So don't complain about the pacing. But the number one moment, of the best moment of the Video Game Award show, at least according to me, according to my article, and I don't know if you guys watched it, when Reggie Fils-Aimé walked on stage and delivered this passionate speech about indie video game developers and how it is the most important award of the night and they are the future of the video game industry, and everyone started small, including Miyamoto and Iwata, and they themselves were once indie video game developers. That is what the award show should be. That is that segment with Reggie. Not only was it the best moment of the award show, but that is what an award show is supposed to be. So Jeff Keighley needs to stop going on Twitter. He needs to stop worrying about what people want from the award show, because what they want is they don't want an award show. If he wants people to take the video game industry seriously and this event seriously, he needs to present it to adults and not, no offense, not teenagers, not young kids who are looking for the next Fortnite skin or the Star Wars crossover with Fortnite. It's about awards. And so as much as I love Jeff Keighley and he seems like the nicest guy in the world, what he's doing is also disrespectful for the video game industry.
Yeah, I agree that people want basically just another E3 presentation. You know, it's just an industry-wide E3 presentation. That's all. They want everybody to show up and announce games. And that has nothing to do with an award ceremony. I mean, the Oscars started as an industry event, all right? It wasn't necessarily broadcast. It was just because, like many industries have, it's not just entertainment industries that have annual awards. Like there are lots of corporate awards, or you know, get best salesman, you know, a real estate company or something like that, right? These are industry events, and they're there to recognize and congratulate people on outstanding achievements over the course of a year. Make your focus around that, and that's it. And you can have things that celebrate the industry, like you talked about Reggie coming on and talking about indie games. That celebrates the industry in general. You don't need to do you know these previews constantly, because it does cheapen it. And you're exactly right. Like, if they want to be taken seriously, then take yourself seriously, take your own events seriously, and don't worry if people are tuning in or not. I understand there's financial things at play if you want to do this, but then start smaller. Make the awards about the awards and actually take the award part of it seriously.
Exactly.
Or else it is just a little plastic thing that you're handing out. Nobody's going to care about it. And already, like, nobody cares who wins. When you look at the conversation around the awards, nobody's talking about who won. People are only talking about what was shown.
Exactly.
And it's that's what you want.
Super funny that you say that, because I feel like it's so much easier to see all the big highlights and announcements, and it's so much harder to see who won each award, like, anywhere you look.
Do you know who won the best RPG game of the year? No, you don't, because they forgot to announce it. Can you imagine it's the Academy Awards and they forget to announce who wins Best Cinematographer? They forgot to give out an award during the video game award show. This is an award show. And again, I wrote a very positive review of the award show for what he did. It doesn't mean I agree with what he did. Like, I like the fact that they had this really funny Muppet sequence. Stuff like that is cool. But if you're going to play commercials, which you need to do because you have to finance this event, you play it during the commercial breaks. You don't make the actual show a big, giant commercial. The Academy Awards goes to commercial break, and you will see an ad for a sandwich shop, McDonald's, a car, Doritos. Same as when you watch a Super Bowl. But it's not like when you're watching the Super Bowl or the Academy Awards, like the football players walk out and they start, they start advertising McDonald's like on the field. It's not like you're watching the Academy Awards to give out Best Director and all of a sudden they tell you that you should go see the next Star Wars movie.
And please buy season tickets next year so that I can get paid a lot more money. Right, like that's not what they're out there doing.
And I just, the thing is, it's like when he's on Twitter and he's asking for feedback and people are being so negative, I'm like, you're asking for it. But like the thing is, I've been watching Mad Men for about 5 weeks, and you all know I'm like obsessed with marketing, right? And in the show, Don Draper always says people do not know what they want. It's and like the most famous marketers will tell you the exact same thing. You gotta show them. You gotta like that's the whole point of marketing. Like you let people know you're interested in so and so product. You don't go and ask for feedback because what's happening is you can't please all of those thousands and millions of people that are offering feedback because they all want something different. You just need to do what you want to do. And be true to what you want to do, which is an award show and not an E3.
And marketers know this. You can focus group something to death. And in the end, what you end up with is a watered down, neutered version of a product that otherwise might have been outstanding.
What are you talking? Are we talking about Star Wars right now? No, sorry.
That's a good point because, like, I haven't seen the new Star Wars movie, but all the critics are saying that the new Star Wars movie feels like it was made in response to all the negative criticism towards the previous Star Wars movie.
Yep.
So they go in and they want to make this movie and correct what people think that they did wrong in the previous movie. But here's the problem with that. If you don't know what to do with the Star Wars movie, you're not the right person for the job.
And yeah. I feel like if you don't have the confidence to present an award, to present awards, make that the main focus of your award show, then you need to seriously rethink why you're doing an award show in the first place. What is it that you want to do? Celebrate the video game industry or just show a bunch of trailers? You can round up these companies and get them to show promos. Like they'll be glad to do it because that's just advertising for them.
Yeah, but you do that during a commercial break.
Yeah, exactly. Well, even you don't even, I mean, let them figure all that stuff out. A commercial break would be great. But yeah, don't do it during the show. Take the show seriously. If you want to present awards and you want to recognize the achievements in the industry, then focus on that and
I don't think it needs to necessarily be on awards per se. Like, I think
the people.
What Rick really highlighted really, really well is that the focus just needs to be on the industry. For a change, right? Like an internal inspection of the industry, which is why moments like when Reggie did come onto stage, it resonates with people that were watching because it was the industry actually celebrating itself, which is what the Oscars still do well. Even if it's become super public, it's still a celebration of movies.
But
so,
Tim, that's like, also because they take the awards seriously. They take them deadly seriously. And the way these are voted on, Rick, you brought this up in one of the other podcasts. It's like, how are these things voted on? Who's voting on them? And is this all just kind of, it just doesn't feel, I don't, it doesn't feel like the show itself is taking these things seriously. They forgot to even announce one. How serious could they be taking them?
Here's the thing. The reason why I bring up the Super Bowl is because what happens is you have millions of people who tune in to watch a Super Bowl. Half of those people don't care about football. They just want to see the commercials. But that's the point. You're going to get commercials no matter what. You get commercials when you watch baseball, hockey, football, award shows, except whatever. So in order to fix this, all he needs to do is if PlayStation, Xbox, Microsoft, Nintendo, whoever, if you guys want to premiere a trailer for an upcoming video game, you do it during the commercial break. We don't do it in the show. It's just a commercial. Just like when you watched the Academy Awards and all of a sudden a car commercial pops up during a commercial break. That is considered accepted because it's not within the actual show. It's just a commercial break. That is how you finance your award show. I actually edited out the whole segment when we were talking about the video game award in the last podcast because our show was running too long. So what I said in that show was, the people who vote for or nominate the nominees, who decide who the nominees are going to be, it's apparently like several video game critics from various publications from around the world. I think there's like only one publication from like Japan and only one publication from like Australia, a bunch from the US. There's no publications from Canada, which makes no sense to me because just in Montreal alone, there is over 14,000 people working in the video game industry just in this city alone. I mean, Montreal is like booming when it comes to the video game industry. So like, I don't understand how Jeff Keighley, who's Canadian, does not have one Canadian publication who is submitting nominees. Like, that makes no sense to me.
Developers should also vote, I think. Like, if this is an industry thing that's celebrating the industry, why don't you let the industry actually have a say in what they think the best games of the year were?
I want to know who exactly, like, who exactly was it that was responsible for the nominations? Because, like, for example, you can go on the website and it will list off the publications like IGN, Game Informer, Kind of Funny Games, etc., etc. But does that mean it's the entire staff of IGN who has a say, or is it just like one or two people? Is it everyone from Kind of Funny, or is it just like Greg Miller? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, and I just think like there's a reason why the Oscars has so much notoriety and I don't know, it's considered, I wouldn't call it dignified anymore, but at least we know how the process works, right? The different guilds nominate. So the cinematographers nominate best cinematography. The Directors Guild nominates the best directors. You know, the Producers Guild nominates the best pictures, and the actors nominate the best actors. And then everybody votes on it in the end. All right, everybody's a member of the Academy.
Yeah, well, the problem with the Academy Awards is the nomination process is usually pretty good. But when it comes to voting, what happens is you have some really busy people who don't have time.
Yeah, nobody sees the movies.
Yeah, they don't see it, or they only watch like 2 out of 10 nominees. So like, it's like, oh yeah, I watched Cats and I saw Star Wars, but I didn't see the other 8 nominees, so I'm just going to vote for Cats. So like, all award shows have problems.
Sure, sure. But we know who does it. We know who is doing this. You are a member of the members of these guilds are the ones that do the nominations. I would like to know a little bit more about the process of who is coming up with the nominations and the voting and how the voting works with this award show.
Yeah. If I was Nintendo or Microsoft or Sony, I would not give Jeff Keighley any world premiere trailers or any previews of anything that's coming out next year, because I would be like, dude, this is an award show that's supposed to pay honor, like it's supposed to honor the best video games and all the hard work that went into making these video games of the past year. So we're not going to look to the future. Let's look to the past one last time.
Do you think it's possible that the people in the industry, I mean, you can't speak for everyone, of course, but do you think it's possible that voices like those at Nintendo or Microsoft, do you think they just like don't give a crap? Like part of me wonders, no one takes this seriously. I don't think they take it seriously.
Say yes and no. I think Reggie does, like, just based on his speech. Like, I think the thing is I think a lot of people in the video game industry, they want video games to be taken, like, it's, yes, commercially, it's more successful than the movie industry, than the TV industry, than you name it. Like, the video game industry is just blowing up, right? It makes so much money. But the people that make these games, they are artists, and they want their work to be considered like work of art, and they want the same kind of like, they want people to look at the video game industry the way they look at the film industry. So like, the film industry has the Academy Awards and the Cannes Film Festival, and the video game industry has E3 and the Video Game Awards, which is kind of like a joke. And I think people do want a really, really good award show, and I think Jeff Keighley is close, and I think it's easy to fix this award show. Like I said, commercial breaks are fine. You can use the commercial breaks to advertise whatever you want to advertise. But the actual show itself has to be about the award show. If people find it boring, that's fine. Award shows are boring. You know what? They're still going to watch. They're going to stick around just to watch his damn commercials. So that's fine.
do you know why people watch? They watch because they're supposed to be caring about the medium. They're not supposed to be there to... The reason that I grew up watching the Academy Awards was because I loved movies so much. I was so interested in movies that I was willing to sit through this award show, and not only willing to sit through it, I was actively interested in it.
Well, because you care about who's going to win. I mean...
But I cared about movies, not for the sake of like some sort of popularity contest, but because I loved to hear people talk about the movies that came out last year, and I loved to know what I needed to see that I hadn't seen yet. And we're talking about me as a 13-year-old. I loved watching the Oscars, and I feel like it didn't matter to me that I didn't need to see previews for the movies that were coming out next year. I was more than happy to celebrate the movies that had come out that year and to be introduced to movies that I hadn't quite seen. If people are truly into this industry and if they want it to be taken seriously, if they're actually passionate about it, they'll sit through an award show that's just about awards.
Yeah, and you know what the thing is that all the 10-year-olds and 14-year-olds and 18-year-olds that are watching this year and next year, they're maybe not that interested. They're going to keep watching, and when they're 30 or 40, you're still gonna have an audience. Like, you just got to do an award show. You know, number two on my list was the Game Awards Orchestra, because they are celebrating the best music of the best soundtracks of the best video games, and it's amazing to watch them perform. Those are the moments that people want to see. And so the last thing I'm going to say is, and I put this on my list and everyone made fun of me, they announced a new Fast and Furious Crossroads video game, right? Now, again, you already know that I feel like this should not have been announced, but within the award show, if it was a commercial break, that's a whole different story. I don't have a problem with him inviting celebrities to give out awards. What I have a problem with, though, is Vin Diesel deciding to pause the award show to promote his movie in the most shameless way possible,
right,
before moving on.
Yeah. It's just right now it just seems like it's a big, well, I wanted to say circle jerk, but you might want to edit that out. That's what it seems to be, this thing where it's just let's try to get as many celebrities as possible and have a big, great big party. But we don't really know why, and we're just trying to be as popular as we can be for fans. It's the equivalent of what critics are saying the new Star Wars movie is, which is just too much fan service. Too much. That's not what award shows are for. They are not for fans. They are for industry.
You also have to consider the beginning place of these awards. Like, not only is it years and years later than something like the Academy Awards, like, it's a new medium, but these awards aren't that old. So, like, it's just come in the age of social media. But also, like...
It's a 40-year-old medium, the Academy Awards...
Not too long after.
Like, video games have always had this kind of the video game industry has always had this kind of problem taking itself seriously.
But it's also like the most consumeristic of all mediums, and I feel like this is the case for the entire industry. Like, look at E3 is the perfect example. We keep mentioning it, but it's not an industry event anymore. They went fully public. So, like, this is the state of everything in video game.
They're trying to sell. And that's the thing. Like, they want to make money off of E3 now. Like, it's not just an industry event. They want to make money off of it. Which, and the video game awards, I'm sure he wants to fund it. And I'm sure he wants to make money off of it, too. Like, that's become his business, right? Doing the video game awards.
No, it's just, I feel like the birthplace of this award show was just like, maybe it came at the wrong time. And maybe it should be more retrospective. Maybe it needs to look back at how the Academy Awards started. Or any other award show started, like, you know, in a different time when the public wasn't ever really a part of it. And I feel like the state of video games, like, everything with video games is so freaking public. And it does not need to be. I think there needs to be more industry events. I think there needs to be more focus on the industry itself, so the industry can help itself along and not get so many voices that are frankly not helpful. And I just don't know. I don't know how we're going to get there at this point, but I do think this would be a good start.
I wish Jeff Keighley would like sit down with me so I can talk to him and pick his brain, because I feel like it's so easy to resolve the issue. Like I said, there's commercial breaks. That's one way to do it. There's also the pre-show. So instead of giving away awards during the pre-show, which doesn't seem like the nicest way to give someone an award. It feels like a throwaway award. Why don't you just do some of like the buildup and hype, like those world premiere trailers during the pre-show, not during the actual award show? You could also do a little like 10-minute montage video, or maybe 10 minutes is too long, maybe 5 minutes, I don't know, where you honor someone every year, like, you know, like a lifetime achievement award. There's all kinds of crazy cool things that you can do. I just don't think it should be a giant commercial.
And that, and like us as true video game fans, like we see figures in the industry that absolutely deserve recognition, and I don't know that they're going to get it anywhere else. Like, sure, like maybe internally, or maybe, you know, there are other video game related awards, but I feel like there, some of these figures that have put in so much work into the industry and like honestly shaped it deserve recognition, and you just like don't know that they're gonna get it necessarily, because instead we're getting a new Xbox.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, everyone was complaining regardless. Like, yeah. Like if you went on Twitter, I was like the only person positive about the Video Game Awards show because it was under 3 hours. And I was like, this is great. It was like just under 3 hours. Fantastic. And everyone's like complaining.
The Game Boys were very positive, but we were also just talking about the Xbox.
Xbox, yeah, so. I know. But like, man, I feel like this guy's going to have a nervous breakdown if he keeps it up. Like, stop listening to people. Do what you set out to do, which is make an award show. And do not worry if it's boring. All award shows are boring. Just give us an actual award show.
Or, you know, again, like what I said, focus on the industry, but feel free to have fun with it. Like, make an award show that is fun to watch. Like, yeah, there's awards being given out, but I don't know. Mario comes out and does the thing. People are happy about it. You know, like, you can have fun. I just, you know, focus on the industry and not what's coming in next year or the year after that, or, you know.
I also feel bad that Hideo Kojima is basically the Tom Hanks of the video game awards. Like, you know, like Tom Hanks is, because he's so connected to the people who are the presidents and who run the Academy Awards right now. Like, he stars in all of their movies. He's always nominated. He's always on stage giving out like a big award. And Hideo Kojima is so close to Jeff Keighley that just because Death Stranding gets like a bunch of nominations, like people just think it's fixed.
But also, Tom Hanks actually delivers stellar performances and is nominated by his peers and the people, like myself included, love him. He's like he's America's sweetheart. Maybe Canada's too, I don't know.
But that's Keanu Reeves. Come on, Tim.
No, he's something different. He's like everything we aspire to be. Every single person should aspire to be Keanu Reeves. Anyway, but when it comes to like Hideo Kojima, he's buddy with the guy that makes it. He makes a game that some people enjoyed, some people panned, and it still gets nominated, even though, you know, when you look at a conglomerate of reviews, it's sitting at like 60 or 70 when everything else is up in the 80s and 90s. It is a little funny looking. I'm not going to say that it wasn't honest and earned, but it does look a little shady.
It totally does. Whether there was or not. I mean, come on.
It looks extra shady because he won Best Director. Yeah. And the game didn't win Best Game. It's like when you watch the Academy Awards and the movie that wins Best Picture doesn't win Best Director. It's like sometimes it happens. Sometimes there's two movies that are like so good, right?
And it's
so
happened half a lot more lately.
Yeah. So like usually what happens is there's two movies that are really good, and so you want to vote for both, and you can only pick one, and so everyone, it's divided, right? Like 50% of people choose this, and 50% of people choose that, and whatever. But like it's very odd when the person that makes the best movie and or the best video game doesn't not win Best Director.
Because how could you have the best movie of the year without it being the best directing of the year? That's always been the logic. People have always wondered, how could it be the best movie of the year and yet it didn't have the best direction? Because
it makes no sense.
Such an important part of filmmaking. It's the most important part. And how could it not be? It's always been a funny thing. Now, I do want to say, like, yes, Death Stranding getting nominated looks totally shady. Look, all award shows have their outliers, and there are always movies or, you know, songs or TV shows that have been nominated for awards that that the majority of people maybe thought they didn't deserve. That is something that tends to happen. So I'm fine. Like, whatever. You're going to have those outliers every now and again. And if Jeff Keighley is giving his buddy a little bit of extra, I don't know, consideration, I'm not too concerned. You know, the Golden Globes is the same thing. Hollywood Foreign Press, they make their own minds up, and they often make strange decisions based on who they like and who they don't like. Like, that's more of a popularity contest than anything else, in a schmooze fest. So I kind of get it. Maybe the Video Game Awards is kind of like the Golden Globes, because that's also an association of critics, and this is an association of critics voting on it. So whatever. People like to schmooze, and you just got to sort of put up with that. Hopefully they get most of them right.
I don't know, man. If Fast and Furious Crossroads is nominated for Best Video Game next year, I'm gonna have some questions for Mr. Jeff Keighley.
Only if I see pictures of him clubbing with Vin Diesel.
And a car.
Right.
Yeah, so I think that should probably be it for the Video Game Awards, because we have our own rankings to go through. Why don't we take a break, and then when we come back, we're going to focus on the Nintendo games that received rankings in our best games of 2019. Don't go anywhere.
Fisamac is in the house. Thank you, thank you, thank you for that warm welcome. It was just over 16 years ago that I joined this industry as an executive. But truth be told, I've been around as a fan and as a player for so much longer. Like you, I've witnessed the growth of our favorite form of entertainment, and now video games are bigger than the movie industry, bigger than music, bigger than television. But most importantly, video games continue to innovate, not only as entertainment, but also into areas far more profound. Experiences with their foundation in video game technology are being used to help surgeons practice before a difficult procedure, and to enable college students to simulate business situations and develop real-world skills. I may no longer be an executive in this industry, but I'll always be an ambassador for video games as a force for good and a force for fun.
Welcome back to NXPress. We're at our main event, a discussion of Goomba Stomp's list of the top 20 games of 2019. And we are going to name all the games, show them the proper respect that they are due, take the moment to recognize them, we'll give them awards. And we're going to focus on the Nintendo games because this is a Nintendo show, but we are still going to mention every game. So Rick, you have our list pulled up. I'm looking at it as well. Why don't we go ahead and just start with number 20?
So we only decided to publish a list of the 20 best video games of this year. I think last year we did 30 because there were so many ties. Usually we try to stick to 25. So number 20 is Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. Number 19 is Apex Legends. Number 18 is Baba Is You, which is out on the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, we reviewed this game. I reviewed this game actually for the site. I am shocked that it made the top 20 list. And if it were up to me, I would replace Baba Is You, which I think is a middling, it's not the revolutionary puzzle game that people have made it out to be. It's actually a pretty standard puzzle game. It just has to be presented in a way that is unusual. But I would have replaced that with a game that didn't make our list, which is Box Boy plus Box Girl, a far superior puzzle game.
So the funny thing is, halfway through the year, we published our list of the best games so far. It's right after E3. And Box Boy plus Box Girl made the cut. So did Bob Is You. But I think a lot of people just forgot about that game.
You know what?
Yeah.
I think I am a culprit.
Yeah, I think so.
I think I just forgot. When it came time to vote, I was like, oh, I haven't even played any games. And I started writing them all down. And I was like, oh, dang, I've played a lot of games this year. And
you know what I'm going to do next year? Next year, I'm going to send everyone a list of all the video games that were, maybe not all the games that were released, but all the video games that we at least wrote about on the website. Because I was talking about this earlier on Workplace, which is what we use to
to organize the website, to manage everything and speak to the writers and editors. And I kind of feel like when people were submitting their votes, I think a lot of people forgot about the games that were released in the first 3 months of the year.
Yeah, it can happen.
Yeah.
Anyhow, Baba Is You, to be fair, it's not just our website. I know on several websites, it's actually cracked the top five. You know, on our list, it's sitting at number 18. I should pause and just let everyone know that on the website, we also have the list of the 25 best indie games released in 2019. And I think out of 25, I think six, maybe seven made the list, like the list, like the best games of the year. Baba Is You is one of those seven games. So number 17 is Kingdom Hearts 3. And number 16 is The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, which I'm not surprised it made the list, because if you've ever visited GoombaStomp.com, chances are you've read at least one of our 50 articles about Link's Awakening. Not the remake, just Link's Awakening in general. Either articles about the characters or the story, about the original, about the importance of the original, and how, like, it was the first game you've ever played, how it changed your life. I think, Tim, you wrote that article, right? The games that changed our lives, Link's Awakening. Could be wrong.
Maybe. I can't remember. Something I would talk about.
And so the thing about the list, and I say this each and every year, is what's great about the list is it is our staff list. And it makes sense. Like, when I look over the list, I'm like, it totally makes sense that these are the 20 games that made the cut, because they are the games that best represent the staff and what we played and discussed and wrote about the most over the course of the past 365 days.
Mm-hmm. If I would say Link's Awakening was on my list. I mean, anybody who listens knows I have my problems with the port. And again, I wrote the review for this game. And I did have some problems with the performance of the remake. I would have actually rather seen Yoshi's Crafted World be in this spot. I think it deserves a low spot if it's on the list at all. I think I would have rather seen Yoshi's Crafted World in place of Link's Awakening, just because A, it was a new game, and B, like, the visuals on that were just as compelling, if not more so. And
it's so hard when you've got something like this that's been remade, and so it's not an original product. If it were the original game, if Nintendo just came out with this, first of all, like, if it was Nintendo's straight product, the craftsmanship would have been higher probably. But it would have been novel then, and it would have been new and unique. This is a remake, so it's like, it's really hard, even though it's my favorite game. And I do think that this is a sensational way to experience Link's Awakening for the first time. And I think objectively, this is better than Yoshi. It is a remake, so it's really hard to want to place it super high. I think it was like my number four still, because I love Link's Awakening, but...
Yeah, I think the problem is looking over the nominations, what happened was everyone who voted for Link's Awakening also voted for Yoshi. The problem is that Link's Awakening was usually put higher. Say within, like, it was put higher, like maybe the top five or what have you. And Yoshi was always kind of like one of the last two picks. And again, a game that came out early in the year that a lot of people forgot about, because halfway through the year, when we published our list of the best games of the year so far, Yoshi was on the list. Now, if we had made a list of the best 30 games, Yoshi would be on the list. The reason why I chose the best 20, so the way it works at GoombaStomp.com, it seems complicated, but it's not really. So all the writers email me their nominations. The first thing I do is I eliminate games that were only nominated by one person. You have to have multiple nominations to be considered. So, for example, someone nominated Need for Speed. It was like the only person who played and liked Need for Speed. So it's like, it's not going to make the list because it's a staff list, right? It's not your list. It's a staff list. The second thing we do is we give a point for every single nomination, right? So if Link's Awakening, if 10 people nominated, it gets 10 points. And then afterwards, we look at the order. The order matters. So if, like, Patrick puts Link's Awakening number one, and Tim puts it number 10, well, that number one spot is valuable, right? So I add up all the points. And at the end of the day, Yoshi just did not have enough points to make the cut. If we had done 30, sure. But the problem with doing 30 games, and the reason why I didn't list 30 games, is because there were so many ties that we would actually have to list 37 games. You see what I'm saying? And so I have to make a decision. Where are we going to cut it?
Of course.
I'm not going to, like, I'm not going to publish a list of 37. It's just odd. And then that means we have to write 17 more capsule reviews, which is time consuming.
Yeah, I get it. And again, Link's Awakening was on my list, so this isn't one. This isn't like Baba Is You, which I felt really Box Boy, Box Girl was the far superior puzzle game. Link's Awakening was on my list, so I'm cool with it being there. I kind of wish Yoshi's Crafted World got a little more recognition from people. I do think it's a case of people forgetting about it a little bit, because that was a really, really fun game.
It was a good game, but I don't think it's a memorable game. I thought its predecessor was Yoshi's Woolly World. I thought was just all around more memorable, and I just had a better time with it for whatever reason. And I don't know, I felt like this one, it's a great game. It's worth picking up if you have someone to play with, I feel like. And it's a shame that it's not on the list, but I also, I get it.
Before I get to number 15, I should also mention that what's tricky about the video game industry, it's not like movies. It's not like you need a specific DVD player or Blu-ray player to play Spider-Man, which is released by Sony, and you can go to the same movie theater to see the exact same movie. With video games, like, if you have a game that's exclusive to a console, well, if you don't have the console, you can't play, say, for example, you can't play Luigi's Mansion. Exactly. Yeah. So what I've noticed is there's always this problem with the exclusives, and it's not to say that they don't appear high on our list. They do, but there's a bigger challenge for an exclusive to end up higher on a list because, for example, number 15 is Slay the Spire. Now, Slay the Spire is a great, fantastic indie game. It's on our list of best indie games. Everyone seems to love this game. The game's also available on different platforms. So if you don't have a Nintendo Switch, you can play the game on, say, your PC. And so, therefore, the chances are a game like this will be played by more people and therefore has a chance of getting more nominations. So Slay the Spire is number 15. Number 14 is Life is Strange 2. Number 13 is Disco Elysium, which, man, I hope that game comes to Switch, but I doubt it. Number 12 is The Outer Wilds, not to be confused with Outer Worlds. Number 11, now this is interesting. Number 11 is our highest rated indie game. It's also a game that's available on all platforms. It is Bloodstained: Ritual of the Nights. But the problem with this game, and I'm really surprised it landed so high on our list, is because, as everyone knows, the port, the Nintendo Switch port for Bloodstained: Ritual of the Night was kind of like a mess when it was first released. So a lot of people who've played this game on Switch might tell you it's not a good game because of the performance issues.
Yeah, and I remember I reviewed that for the podcast on Switch, and boy, was it a little bit rough, but I did enjoy the game still. So I still, despite the performance issues, at least in the beginning, especially, I did enjoy the game. It made me kind of wish that I had another console so that I could play it as it's truly supposed to be. I will say this, though. There was an update released. I did go back to try it out and see how it was with the update. It is much smoother than it was before. Obviously, visually, it's not going to look the same as the PS4 or Xbox One versions because they're going to be prettier. But the gameplay works much better after their patch. So they have at least fixed it. If you're a Switch owner and you're curious about this game, they've fixed a good portion of it. It plays much better now.
Yeah, it was on my top 7, I believe. It's one of my favorite games of the year. If you are a fan of Castlevania, clearly you're going to love the game, especially if you're a fan of Symphony of the Night. I played it on my PlayStation 4 because I got a review code. And because, like, I had this thing where if I get a review code, it means I got a free game. And if I really, really love the game, I'm willing to actually go out and buy a physical copy to add to my collection. So a part of me wants to buy the physical copy of this game for the Nintendo Switch. The only reason why I haven't yet is because right now I'm knee deep in replaying a game, which I'm going to talk about later on, which I'm absolutely in love with. But yeah, I'm thinking about buying it again, and it's really, really good. And I'm not surprised it's sitting at spot number 11, to be honest. What I am surprised about, though, is spot number 10, and I have a big problem with this, Tim. Number 10 is Pokemon Sword and Shield.
How did it even get that high, I wonder? I can't believe it, because it seemed like everybody was kind of, we were getting all these articles like James doesn't like Dynamaxing and Brent thinks the single player experience is hollow. And yet still this thing lands at number 10.
Oh, Tim, I did that.
You're the only fan.
That was me. That was me. Nope. Listen to all the Game Boys. Go listen to all of the Game Boys because they are of sound mind and sound logic. And we looked at the game critically, put aside personal feelings, and reviewed the dang thing. And it's sensational.
Well, look, I mean, you voted it really high. I think you put it on like your number one spot. Yeah, number one. So what happened was the game was sitting on our top 20. I think it was at number 18. And then more nominations started coming in. And I was like, you know, calculating all of I was tallying up the votes and everything. And then it went straight to number 10. It's because the last few people that sent in their nominations, the day of the deadline, they picked Pokemon Sword and Shield as their number one game of the year. But the thing that's odd about it is like what Patrick said. There's a lot of people who nominated and voted for Pokemon Sword and Shield, but yet they wrote these 2,000 word articles about all the problems with the game. So yeah. I'm like, how is it on our top 10? I'm not complaining it's on our list of best games of the year. I get it. Once again, the list represents the staff. And as everyone knows, you know, Goomba Stomp has a lot of writers who are Pokemon fans. I'm just confused why it's on a top 10.
But to the game's defense, like, I spent about as much time as I would writing a full review as I did on this little tiny capsule. Like, I really tried to distill all of my thoughts into this little 3-paragraph thing that was maybe just 400 words. And I think, I do not want to step on any toes here, but I think that a lot of the issue around this game is that it does have issues, and a lot of people are able to look over them because of how far it exceeds previous Pokemon titles, how much they did change, and how much they were willing to bring to the table. And I think that a lot of people are caught up in the nitpicks. I think that if one element doesn't sit well with you, like James and Dynamaxing, like, I really think James needs to set that aside. I feel like his review felt, when I first read it, I felt it was a little imbalanced. And consequently, if you're looking at other reviews, his seems to be in the minority. And it's stuff like that. Like, sure, one element might be slightly off, but when you look at the whole thing, is it one of the most exciting Pokemon games we've ever gotten, or at least the most realized Pokemon world we've ever seen? And in that case, I think it is. I think it, if Tim Mason as a whatever year old in elementary school playing Red and Blue, if I had gotten a chance to play this soon after, it would have just absolutely blown my mind. And then I would have been like, yes, this is what I've always dreamed of. But so, I don't know.
That's kind of our point, Tim, is that all these people have written negative articles, including James, they must have set it aside because it got enough points to be in the top 10. It didn't happen by you nominating, you know, you alone. There were enough people that voted this thing high in order for it to make the top 10. So it's just kind of surprising that we saw all these negative articles and yet the writers still voted it in the top 10.
it's also a long-term series. And I feel like anytime you have something like that, even the fans are sometimes going to get in like bitter for whatever reason. So sometimes it almost doesn't matter how good the game is. Like, sometimes you're just like so fed up with the series about one thing or another that it all comes out during one game. And this has happened to so many games over the history of time. But yeah, it's tricky placing this. I'm actually surprised it's not higher, frankly.
The last person who sent in a nomination for Pokemon Sword and Shield was Alyssa. And she put it number one, and that's how it ended up on the top 10. But yeah, there was quite a few people who voted it really high. Tim, Antonia, can't remember who else. The thing about Pokemon, any Pokemon game, is I think the target audience is still kids. Like, any, I don't know, kids between the age of, like, whatever, 5 and 15. Like, yeah, Game Freak and Pokemon Company understand that there are adults who still play Pokemon games, but they're still trying to target a younger audience, right? And I think what happens is, maybe I'm wrong, but a lot of people who have been playing Pokemon for 20, 25 years, it's hard to make them happy because if you don't change things, it becomes repetitive and dull. And if you do change things, that's where it becomes tricky because people just don't like change, especially when it's changing something that they already love. And so Pokemon's like Star Wars. It's one of those franchises
where it's really hard for the creators to do anything with it and try to make everybody happy. But that said, everyone seemed to love Sun and Moon.
Yeah, true. But I think that having played Sword and Shield, and I look back at Sun and Moon, they're great games. I realize how complacent I was, though. It's still pretty dang formulaic. It scared my little brother away because he didn't need any more hand-holding, and the tutorial in that game is 3 hours. In this game, if you know what you're doing, this is one of the first Pokemon games that I feel like truly trust the player, and they skip over a bunch of junk that you already know how to do. And consequently, within 30 minutes, I was out on my own, doing my own thing, like on a full-fledged journey. And I feel like that kind of thing is being overlooked in favor of like, oh, they cut a bunch of Pokemon. Oh, it's too easy. Like, there's so many nitpicks that you can make that sometimes, even if they do the right thing, they do loosen the reins and kind of let players play the game on their own. That kind of gets overlooked. And I was really, really quick to point it out that, like, yeah, you can do, you're off on your own. I love that.
Okay, well, it's on the top 10. I don't know if I agree with you that it should be higher, but, you know, it's top 10 is really good.
I mean, you also haven't played the game, so I'm going to...
Well, no, but I feel confident saying it's one of the worst games on a Nintendo Switch, so I don't have to play it.
Yeah.
I'm just joking. I have played it. I played it for a total of 5 minutes. Number 9. It's not for me, Tim. Sorry.
It's the
number
worst
9
minutes of his life.
I played it for about 10 minutes, to be fair.
Oh, okay.
Number 9 was The Outer Worlds, and this game's actually going to get released on the Nintendo Switch next year, so I'm super excited about that, so we can actually talk about it, because I haven't played it. I don't know about you guys, but...
Not yet.
Number 8 is a game directed by Hideo Kojima. Can you guess?
Death Sitting. Stranding.
I was actually really surprised I'm still surprised actually that it's so high on our list. It's one of those games. It's kind of different than the Pokemon situation where Pokemon, a lot of people voted for Sword and Shield. This game, it's like few people voted for it, but they voted for it like number one. So it just received like so many points from like three writers and also a few writers who put on like the bottom of their top 10 or 15. So yeah, it's one of those games. But again, it's a AAA title that's also exclusive as of right now to the PlayStation 4. So if you don't have a PS4, you can't play it. So I'm really surprised they made it so high on the list. That was probably the biggest shock for me.
This is one of those weird titles that like I shouldn't care one bit how it does. It's clearly not for me, but because it's so extremely not for me, I kind of wish it was lower. I'm like just that petty. I'm like, you should be number 10 and Pokemon should be 8. That'd be better. But I haven't touched this, so I can't vote on it. But also, it's a convoluted walking simulator that looks like nonsense and talks down to its audience, but enjoy.
That thankfully will never be on Switch.
Yeah, so you know what? I'm actually going to agree with you. I think the order should be swapped, and I'm not entirely sure why it's above Pokemon Sword and Shield, because again, the list represents the entire staff, and despite the fact that our staff has issues and nitpicks with like Pokemon Sword and Shield, everyone seems to still like the game enough to vote for it.
That's what I'm saying. And I feel like maybe that's my perspective, is like, how's the gameplay? Does it feel good to play? Is it fun to play? And that's king for me. So I play Pokemon and I'm like, good game, real fun, real good. And I feel like maybe some people can't look past that. And here you have a game that does not look fun to play, but people are like, oh, art, cinematics, graphics, yada, yada, yada.
No,
it's just not me.
That's not the issue. The issue is that a few elites voted in Death Stranding while the masses all enjoyed Pokemon. If you're going to have a representative game, Pokemon probably represents the staff more than Death Stranding does. Death Stranding represents only a few writers.
To be fair, it had like 3 more votes. You know what I mean? Like, it could have gone either way.
I feel like it's the same writers that somehow always bring up, a certain Dark Souls franchise, Mr. Mike Warby. Get him on the show, Rick. I need to
yell at him. We're going to talk about Mike when we get to the number one pick, because I'm sure he's going to listen to the podcast. We're going to come back and talk about this.
We're just messing with you.
Number seven is Astral Chain. So wait, before you guys start raving and or complaining about Astral Chain, can I just point out that on the top 10, on the top 20, a lot of these games are exclusive to Nintendo Switch. In fact, the Switch has the most exclusive games on our top 20 over any platform. Astral Chain, number seven.
That's because year after year, Nintendo provides exclusive titles that are of a caliber that cannot be matched by Sony and Microsoft as a whole. And maybe they have one game that is better than one or two of Nintendo's, but year after year after year, we've been saying it year after year after year, the Switch or even the Wii U before it has 4 to 5 stellar exclusives that are worth playing, that are noteworthy for the entire year and not just on Nintendo consoles. And so by the end of these consoles' lifetimes, we have stellar libraries. Astral Chain is a perfect example of this.
2019 was a way better year than 2018. But, well, I guess we did think it was going to be great because Animal Crossing was supposed to come out.
We were
but
hoping
there was, it would be great. Yeah, but there was games like Astral Chain. We knew it existed, but we didn't anticipate that people would love it so much it would end up on our top 10. It's been a really, right? really good year for Nintendo Switch, to the point where, you know, you mentioned Yoshi's not on this list. Like, Super Mario Maker 2 is not on this list, and Box Boy's not on this list.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. And hey, look, Astral Chain, I've always said this. I don't like that game, but I don't blame anybody else for liking it. I don't think there are things I don't like about the game. I am a little surprised it ended up as high as it did. Again, I would have thought that Pokemon would have been above Astral Chain, that Astral Chain would have been in the bottom of the 20. Of the top 20, but, you know, down to like 15, 16, that's the kind of game it feels more like to me. I know one of our writers, at the time, it was his favorite game of the year. I'm not sure if the year ended up that way for him. Renan, I believe, said it was his
voted game. For Death Stranding.
Okay, so I mean, again, I'm kind of surprised that it made it as high as it did. I would have expected Pokemon to be above Astral Chain. But yeah, I have no axe to grind with Astral Chain. That was a personal preference, not for me, but... Good on everybody else.
And number six is Devil May Cry 5. There's no DMC games on Nintendo Switch, right?
There are DMC
games.
They're out.
And three,
the DMC remake is on there.
Okay. For some reason, I thought it was coming out next year.
Dear listener, if you have not played Devil May Cry, so good. I love Devil May Cry. So fun. Speaking of just like dumb, fun, hyper-stylized action games done right, Devil May Cry. All the way.
So DMC 5 was on my top 5, but it's not on the Switch. It's just the older games that are on the Switch.
And I'm sure this is one of those things. I was talking to one of my co-hosts of Game Boys, and I was like, I'm pretty sure this would have been like my number 2 had I played it yet, but I haven't gotten around to it. And I love Devil May Cry, but like, you know, I've got a Nintendo show, so I've got to focus on Nintendo titles. And I was a little bit more excited for some other titles at the time. So
I don't understand why Dante's not in Super Smash.
I've been calling for Dante to be in Smash and Travis Touchdown for years, and Goku for years. Well,
Dante just got on the Switch. Like, I mean, the DMC just came out. It didn't come out that long ago. Like, it hasn't been out for a long time. So I think...
Announcement. How many do we have one left?
There's going to be
first,
more.
The first set that is the... Because right now they're doing mostly non-Nintendo... focused here, like fighters, and I would love Dante to get a slot like that, because honestly, I'm almost always more excited when it is a Nintendo character. Like, of all the new ones that we've gotten, I was the most excited about Piranha Plant, but like, that's just me. I don't play Persona, so I don't care about Joker or what's his name from whatever fighting franchise that I also don't care about. Like, it's just not... Banjo's cool, but, like, it's... Some of these just haven't been for me, really. Dante would be. And I feel like if that was the last of the original... whatever they called DLC Fighter Pack, or whatever it was called, that would be stellar.
But they're going to make more. Remember, they announced that they're going to keep on making extra characters.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure at that point they'll be willing to go back to Nintendo characters.
Which... I think they should. I think... I think they should, at least for like the next five, but I also think that they should make I think they should include Dante, Travis for sure. And you know, the entire cast of Three Houses, but you know, that's only like what, 62 characters.
Everyone is in Rick. Everyone.
Hey, they can at least put the Three House leaders.
What? No, everyone is here. That was what it was. Yeah, the Three House leaders, or at least the most popular, if they could figure it out who it was.
They sort of can. Well, it depends. So when you play the game, you can play, you can link to the internet. You can link online, and it keeps track of who you play with and who you recruit. And they have stats on who the most popular characters are.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it changes like daily.
Right, so... which is fun and cool. But also, the game is oversaturated with Fire Emblem characters, so. There are 800 Pokemon, guys. Put more in.
All right, kidding. So we're at the top five. Now, the thing about the top five is the top five is really the top five. Like, you know, when you talk about number 10 to 6, like I said, you can easily replace number 10 and 6. Like number 7 won the 7th spot over, like, the 8th place game by, like, one vote. You know what I mean? Like, there's, like, a separation between, like, 1 and 3 votes between those, like, picks. But when it comes to the top five, these are the top five. Like, these games ran away with the votes and nobody was catching up to them. I don't care, like, if 10 more people voted for it.
I do draw issue with one of them a little bit, and maybe I'll mention it, but go on.
Okay, so number five is, and I believe it's properly pronounced Sekiro. Yep. Shadows Die Twice. Number four, love this game. Love this game. Luigi's Mansion 3.
Okay.
Very deserved, I think.
I haven't played Resident Evil or Control, but spoilers, sorry, but Luigi's better than both of those.
I'm going to disagree, and I'm a huge fan of Luigi's Mansion.
I think 4 is perfect. I think this it's in the right spot. Look, on a list of best Nintendo games, it would be number 2, but behind obviously what our number 1 will be, maybe.
Hold on. Yeah.
No, I think this is perfect. Number 4 is a great spot. I was thrilled to see Luigi's Mansion crack the top 5. I think it's in the perfect spot. I understand that some of these other games, look, I would love to play Resident Evil 2. I wish that was on Switch. That looks absolutely awesome to me. Control, I don't really care about, but yeah, I would love to play Resident Evil 2. I'm just glad Luigi's Mansion made the top 5. I think 4 is a pretty good spot for it's a really, really good game.
It's honorable, but say something bad about Luigi's Mansion.
I can't
say anything bad about Resident Evil 2.
It's so good, though.
But so is Resident Evil 2, and you haven't played it. Like, here's the thing. Some people would give Luigi's Mansion the edge because Resident Evil 2, to be fair, is a remake.
It's not really, though.
But they didn't have to do anything. Like, they had to make a game, but they didn't have to come up with anything. They got to rehash everything just with, like, Link's Awakening.
Not at all like Link's Awakening. They had to completely redesign the game around the fact that it was going to be from a third person perspective. Like, if you read Rick's review, like, the fact that they had to do sound, they had to think about how sound was going to be utilized in order to clue the player in on where enemies were, because no longer was your perspective the fixed camera. It was now going to be the 3D kind of over the shoulder thing. And that changes the way you play that entire layout. So they had to look at how the layout was, change it slightly because it wasn't going to be workable from the new over-the-shoulder perspective. I mean, they had to take every little bit of that game and redesign so much stuff around how it was going to be played new. I almost consider it to be a new game.
Just like with Resident Evil 1 before it, really.
No. So, like, before we started the podcast, we said we weren't going to really talk about non-Switch games, because if we do, the podcast is going to be too long. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to redirect everyone to a podcast on the website called Before the Internet. You can find it on the navigation menu. Just go to podcasts. You know, it drops down the menu and just click on Before the Internet. I think it was our second episode. We did a 1-hour-long episode review of Resident Evil 2. Go listen to that podcast. I'm not going to argue if you think Luigi's Mansion should be above Resident Evil 2 if you've played both games and you think it's a better game or you had more fun with it. Personally, like, I love both games. I'm just saying I don't have an issue with Resident Evil 2 being at the number 3 spot. Like, when it comes to top 5, Tamita's top five is really good, except for the fact that I never got to finish Sekiro because the game is just too damn hard, which is why I didn't vote for it that high. But Luigi's Mansion, come on. Luigi's Mansion 3 at the number four spot. That's really good.
That's really good, Tim. We should be happy about that. Luigi made it up that high.
One of the more obscure Nintendo franchises is being celebrated is super exciting. It's super well earned. When I look back at this year, I'm going to smile about Luigi's Mansion well into next year. And it's one of those games that I don't replay a lot of games. It's the kind of game that I will go and replay within a year or two. It's just that fun and that good.
I'm on floor 11 now of my second replay my first replay, and I'm still 100%ing it. It's that much fun. I mean, I'm doing it a lot faster, obviously, because I know where everything is now. It's just a fun game to play, and I still love seeing all the worlds. This was everything that I wanted in a Luigi's Mansion game, basically. Like, if they could follow this formula and just keep putting it in different settings, I know they won't keep following a formula because they're Nintendo and they're always going to tinker with it. But this, to me, this was everything I wanted in the Luigi's Mansion game.
Yep. You guys know that there's a bunch of DLC coming out next year, right?
It's all two-player stuff. So it's all for the multiplayer. So it won't really affect me at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, so number three is Resident Evil 2, and number two is Control, which I think is a game that Tim would absolutely love if he ever got around to playing it.
It's on my Xbox. I'll get to it.
Yeah. So that leaves the number one game of the year. Now, over on Facebook, I don't even know if you guys are on Facebook, but Mike went on this big rant about it. He's like, I can't believe this is on the list. He's like, I'm shocked. I never thought this game would make it number one. And I'm like, why not? It makes total sense. I'm like, again, it's a staff list, right? And if you go on, if you were to like browse our private workspace, our workplace space, which is what we use to manage the website. Throughout the entire year, the whole entire staff kept on talking about this game. When it comes to writing articles, everybody wrote an article about this game, multiple articles. The game got a rave review. We've been talking about it on our podcast ever since it was released, talking about how great it is. So it only makes sense. It's number one. The funny thing is, I did not think this game was going to be number one. I, honest to God, thought Resident Evil 2 would have been our number one game. The fact that Fire Emblem Three Houses is our game of the year is mind-blowing. I am so happy this game made it at the number one spot. It's the only game that received multiple votes where a writer voted it as the number one game of the year, right? So, like, you submit your votes and, like, you submit, like, say, a list of 15 games. And number one, you put Fire Emblem Three Houses. It's the only game where more than one person put it the number one spot.
Didn't you say that Pokemon got a couple?
So Pokemon Go. So whatever, Pokemon Go got a couple. That was only at the last minute, though. That's because Alyssa submitted her list at the last minute. The point is, there was no game that can touch it. And there was like a few people to put on like the top three. Like I think James put in like second spot, and like whoever put in like spot number three. It had the most nominations, and again, it's an exclusive, right? So yeah, to be fair, most people on our website own a Switch, and so therefore most people have a Switch, except for one guy I'm not going to mention, who played the game and fell in love with it. So it says a lot about the game, an exclusive, you know, Fire Emblem. It's not as big of a franchise as Final Fantasy or Legend of Zelda or Super Mario, but this game is just so good. And so I was so happy it won Game of the Year that it decided that we're going to, from now on, whenever we announce our Game of the Year, we're actually going to write a full article celebrating the Game of the Year. So I sat down, I started writing an article, and I was like, okay, I'm going to make it like 700 words, right? It's like 2,000 plus words. Yeah. And like, I wrote it in like an hour. Like, I don't think I've ever written anything so fast in my life. And then after I wrote the article, Guess what I did? I started playing Fire Emblem Three Houses again. I started the game again. I'm playing with the Blue Lions.
Nice.
I got all the DLC. I could not believe, and this is what I wrote in this like freaking 2,000 word article. I can't believe the emotional attachment I have to these characters. Like, I chose a different house. So instead of picking the Golden Deers, I'm now playing with the Blue Lions. Every time I see Claude or Hilda or Raphael or Ignat, like all of my former students, I can't help but just like feel nostalgic. And it's like I miss them. And now I just want to recruit all of them.
Yeah.
So it's like, This game is amazing, and the fact that someone, once again, I won't mention his name, hasn't yet played this game
is just... It is maybe my most anticipated game of 2020.
I mean, Rick, you're exactly... Okay, so I played through all three storylines. Now, I still have to go back and do the Black Eagles special route, and I'm going to buy the DLC. The new story for the DLC is supposed to come out next year. But if you do get it now, you can actually get a couple of characters. So you're able to recruit a couple of characters, including Jiritsa. Jiritsa can be recruited in the Black Eagles storyline. So I'm gonna play through the Black Eagles from scratch again, instead of picking up my old save file where I had saved it at the choice that you have to make, that where the paths can diverge. I'm instead going to just pick up the Black Eagles and start from scratch and play it all the way through, so I can recruit Jiritsa and do all the cool new things of the DLC. Dude, what the way you described it, the way you run, like you run into your former students. I played the Black Eagles first, and yeah, the first time I played Blue Lion second, and the first time I ran into all my Black Eagle students, it's like we had been on this massive journey and they didn't know who I was anymore. And it was like you have such nostalgia for them, and you're like, man, I remember the adventure I had with these people. And you want to recruit them all, which is what I ended up doing. By the time I played the Golden Deer, I was able to recruit every single character that I wanted from both the other two houses, Blue Lions and Black Eagles. So I had this massive team of characters that I could get all these different support conversations with. It is the only game I can think of in the last at least 10 years, over the last decade, where I have listened to every single word of dialogue. I do not cycle through it at all. I don't just read it quickly and move on. I've listened to the voice acting this game.
The voice acting's amazing. It's amazing.
It's the best I've ever heard in any game.
It's really good.
Yeah, and I love the combat is just such... The whole rhythm of the game is so great to me. I love going to combat, going to school, doing the teaching, doing the exploration, and, you know, figuring out what little weird things I want to do on the side, go back to combat again, do some little missions on the side. I love the rhythm of this game. It's just so relaxing.
So when I wrote my 2,000 word article, I wanted to break it into like segments, right? And like basically it's like the, say, top five reasons why this game is number one on our list. And so first of all, it's three games in one. Mm-hmm. And like Patrick said, like each story, like if you pick, like there's three houses which you can choose, each story itself is broken in two, because there's a time jump. And then with the Black Eagles, there's actually an additional story. So really, it's like three games in one times two plus one. Mm-hmm. And that's why it has so much replay value. Then you have the cast of characters. And we've talked about how this game has, I don't know, like over 50 characters. Like each house has its students, but then there's the faculty and the staff and the villains. And every single character is fleshed out. There's backstory to each and every single character. Like, you want to talk about great world building. This game does it better than any game of 2019. It has the best set of characters of any game in 2019. It has the most beloved characters. It has some of the best characters, period. The writing is phenomenal. You can write, like, you can fill up an entire novel with just the conversations between the characters of one house. Forget about three houses. I can't stress how good the writing is and how good the voice acting is.
Fantastic. I 100% agree. This is phenomenal writing, the likes of which I have, and character building, the likes of which I have not seen in a video game.
The other reason why I mentioned the game is so great is because it's so incredibly well-paced, because the actual structure of the game is broken down into like a month, like, you know, like just 12 months in a year. And so you have the calendar, and throughout the week, there is different events, and you get to choose. You, the player, you get to choose what you want to do and what you don't want to do. And at the end of the week, on Sunday, it's the free day. You get to choose whatever it is you want to do. And there's just something about the structure, like the way it's broken up. It never feels tedious or boring. Like, you always sort of like have an idea of what you can expect over the next week or two, because you can see it on the calendar. It's just great. And like the fact that the first half of the game all takes place within the monastery, and in the second half, you're out in the battlefield because there's a war, and you're stuck in the middle of this war in between three nations. So it feels like two games. But the reason why the first half is so important is because that is when you get to really know these characters, because you have to interact with the students. And you can recruit students from other houses, and you can get to know them. And let me tell you something. When it comes to raising the stakes, which is another reason why this is one of the best games of the year, the stakes couldn't be higher. Because especially if you play in classic mode and your character dies and they are gone forever, let me tell you something. When you spend the whole entire first half of the game, 40 hours, recruiting a student, training the student, befriending the student, getting to know the student, helping the student out, offering advice, and then you get into the second half of the game and you're at war and your student dies? Oh my God. Not only are you emotionally attached to the character, but all that time spent developing that character and he's gone. Like, you don't get that playing Resident Evil 2 or Control or any of these other games because those characters just come back. In this game, they can die and they're gone. So you can't raise the stakes any higher than in a Fire Emblem game. Like, in terms of, like, turn-based battles, I think it does everything perfectly. Like, yeah, they changed it. There's no more rock, paper, scissors type of structure to the battles, but I actually love the changes they made.
Yep.
It looks gorgeous. It has one of the best soundtracks of any video game released in 2019. The soundtrack is unbelievable.
I don't know if it looks gorgeous, but I'll give you the soundtrack one. It's not the prettiest game I've seen on the Switch, but it does the job.
I like the art style. You get to the cinematic cutscenes, and yep. Even when you're in battle and you get the cinematic cutscenes in between the attacks, I think that looks good. But yeah, the best story. Like, I can't get over how good the story is.
And there's lots of story. Like, that's the thing. You'll know the full story once you've done all three storylines. Like, that gives you a lot of background, even though they end up different ways. Like, it's not like... Each one gives you a different background on exactly what is happening. And even they will end up, the results will be different. So it's not like these worlds will all collide no matter which house you choose. You know, you're going to come to the same final spot. That is not true. Each house will have you and your characters end in a different spot. The world will be vastly different depending on which house you choose by the ending. But it still fills you, each path fills you in on the storyline, like why this war started and what is happening with all the different characters, to get the full experience of who everybody really is, where they all came from, why they're doing what they're doing, including the mysterious bad guys. You have to play all three. But what I love about it is that the world will be a vastly different place depending on who you play.
The thing is, it's like I'm on my second replay. Technically, I'm on my third replay because my first replay, I died. I had to restart over because I went on like hard mode and everyone just fell in battle. But like now that I'm actually playing on classic. I'm playing on a harder mode now because I understand the mechanics and how the game functions and like what to do, what not to do. And so on my second replay or third replay, my third time playing, I am enjoying the game more than the first time I played it. And there's a lot of reasons to it. It's because I understand how to play it better. But it's also because now I'm like, I don't know, I feel like I can just sit back and enjoy the story more. Because the first time, like, it is somewhat overwhelming. And so you're trying to, like, you know, there's like a conspiracy and a mystery. And there's all these characters. And it's like watching Game of Thrones, like season one. And you still don't know the names of all the Stark children. And you get to season two and you're like, oh yeah, that's Rob and that's Jon and that's Arya and that's Sansa and whatever, right? Like, there's so many characters, there's so much going on. And on my second playthrough, I just enjoyed the game way more than my first playthrough. The point is, our website just turned 4 years old. So in 2016, which is technically the first year of our website, Breath of the Wild, The Legend of Zelda, won best game of the year.
Breath of the Wild came out in 2017.
Yeah.
2017, right. 2016, it was Uncharted 4, and 2018 was God of War. So it was like Uncharted 4, Zelda, God of War, and now Fire Emblem. And I'm glad that Nintendo has taken back the Game of the Year award. Because you know what? If they had released Super Mario Odyssey like a year later, or even a few months later, so it actually got released in 2018... Like, you know, that game could have had, like, a chance to get Game of the Year. You know what I'm saying? Because that game was battling with Zelda at the time.
Mm-hmm. No, I think they knocked it out of the park with this one. It's hard to describe to people who haven't played it exactly why you... I think we did describe it. It's just... I know there's going to be doubters out there for people who have never tried a Fire Emblem game. I hadn't been sold on the Fire Emblem game universe. Rick, you hadn't been sold on the universe yet. I think we're both sold on it now. Like, I can't wait till the next Fire Emblem game now. This to me was just, That's it. It sold me. I'm a Fire Emblem guy now.
We had played a few games. Like, I think you played Awakening or whatever. Yeah. Anyways, but even on Reddit, like, I was talking to some people on Reddit, and they were like, yeah, it's the first time I played this game. I love it, and now I want to go and play all the older games. And that's what's so great about it, because the thing is, a lot of people were afraid to play Fire Emblem Three Houses because, A, it was like, they just thought it would be a time sink. They're like, I don't have 200 hours to put into a video game. Or they just thought it would be too hard. Or like, well, if your character dies, then the game's over and I'm not that good at the game. But the thing about this game is, like, there is three different, like, difficulty settings. So you can go, like, really hard, super hard, and, like, classic. What is it? Like, normal?
It's normal. There's a normal mode. And normal... the normal mode, most people, I think, the game eases you in very well for the most part on normal mode. It eases you in. And you don't have to play classic. So there's classic. And what is it called? Classic is when you can die, but there's a mode where your characters won't die. You also have the rewind ability,
and you have the rewind exactly. So that's there's so many options, right? So like you have three different difficulty settings, and then within the difficulty settings, you can decide if you want your character to die forever or if they come back, and then you still have the rewind function. So that's what's great about it. It caters to everyone. Like, it caters to the masses. So if you're, like, a hardcore veteran of, like, the Fire Emblem series, you're not going to want the easy mode. But for anyone who's playing a Fire Emblem game for the first time, it's the best game to start with. Like, start with this game. And you get three stories in one, unlike Fates, in which the game was divided into three separate purchases.
Yeah, and most people, if I remember right, they said the two stories were basically the same thing anyway. Yeah, these really are different. They will go to some different places. One of them is a darker one. You know, one of them is certainly like more adventurous one. But they all have those. The three main characters all have their own agendas, and that really dictates kind of the flow of the tone of the story. And I think you'll find it interesting as you play each one, how much different the world becomes and where your character ends up. Because, of course, you know, players always expect, like, oh, well, my Byleth is going to be the king at the end, right? He's going to – well, that doesn't always happen. It plays out in interesting ways where you do not always end up in the same place, and the world is very different. I really enjoyed that, even though it takes you on a completely separate journey the second half of each house.
I've been podcasting with you guys for 5 years, and sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes I can kind of like figure out if Patrick's going to like something or not, and if Tim's going to like something or not. Tim, I think you're going to love this game. Listening to your Game Boys podcast, listening to you on the N Express podcast, I think you're going to fall in love with this game.
And I'm certain that I will. Like, too many people that I hold in like too high regard really, really enjoy this game, you guys included. Some other friends of mine have also claimed it is the game of the year. And I have no doubt that I'm going to adore it, especially since it seems like it answers all the questions or the problems that I had with previous Fire Emblem entries. The big thing I'm waiting for is just that expanse of time where I know, because I know I'm going to want to complete every single story. So I just need that big old opening.
The thing is, the first time I tried to replay the game, I just wasn't ready. Like, I needed to separate myself from the game. So I finished the game, like, what, in the month of October, September? I can't remember. And now I sat down. I'm like, you know, the Christmas break, I'm going to sit down and play the game again. But you don't need to jump back and play it. You can, of course, like Patrick did, but you don't like need to replay it right away. It's the kind of game that you can play like story one this year, story two next year, story three the following year, and then the following year you get a new Fire Emblem game.
Yeah, that's a great way to do it, I think. Yeah, because the other thing, Tim, is when you do replay, you're going to be given some advantages. Like, the game will move quicker for you because you will not have to build up certain stats that you built up during your first playthrough. Just start a new game. You'll still be able to keep your old save file. Just start a new game plus or whatever, and it will help you out. It'll knock like 20 hours off of that next storyline, guaranteed. Plus you're going to be able to recruit a hell of a lot faster than you did before. It gives you advantages, so it'll speed up the process a little bit with each successive playthrough. By the time I played my third storyline, I was, you know, a god at that monastery. I could just walk up to people first day of class and recruit them. It was I had so much like the stats that you build up and you're able to carry over really, really help you out. So, yeah, I can't recommend it enough. It was easily my game of the year. I put it number one. Luigi's Mansion 3, love it. It was a, you know, second place for sure, but Fire Emblem had it, no question.
See, the thing is I think Nintendo Switch was the console of 2019. Like, there's a lot of great games on the PS4, like Resident Evil 2, for example, but overall, I think I spent more time on my Switch because of games like Luigi's Mansion, Fire Emblem, Three Houses, all the indie games. I am nervous about 2020, like super nervous, because we have two consoles coming out. We have, hundreds of indie games that, and a lot of really good ones, promising ones, like games that look really good. And then you have Nintendo. And we still are not yet sure what Nintendo's going to give us. Like, there are some announcements. Like, I can easily whip up a list of 20, and maybe we'll do it on the next podcast. But there's a lot of things we don't yet know. And I'm afraid that 2020, like, it was hard enough as a website for us to keep up with the number of games getting released. And it wasn't even, like, really a strong year when you compare it to previous years. 2020 is going to be crazy busy for gamers worldwide. It's going to be insane. If Zelda comes out next year, it's going to be, oh my God, so exciting to watch Zelda compete with The Last of Us 2, maybe, for Game of the Year. You never know. Like, just like the idea of like those two franchises, like those two IPs competing for Game of the Year. Watching, that just blows my mind.
Watching Link put Master Chief in his place.
Yeah. God, Halo. Oh, it's going to be such a crazy year. Anyhow.
But a good year. And you know it's going to be an insane time suck because in March it starts with Animal Crossing. So, man, look out. It's going to be a year. I can't wait to see what wins Game of the Year next year. But Fire Emblem sounds like it handily won it, and it seems super well earned. I can't wait to play it. And I can't say this enough, you guys. My two co-hosts are super valuable critics. They're not always right, like with Astral Chain or Majora's Mask, or maybe they hold Earthbound in too high esteem. But in general, they are super strong critics. And if they're saying Game of the Year 2019 is Fire Emblem Three Houses, I'm willing to say, yeah, give it to Fire Emblem.
Patrick, did you vote at number one?
I did.
Okay.
It was my clear choice. Like, it was number one all the way. Luigi's Mansion was number two.
Yeah. Anyhow, interesting year. It was one of those years where it kind of felt like all the publications, all the websites, even the video game awards, like everyone awarded a different game, like their game of the year.
Maybe it didn't have as many like stone cold classics as some other years have had, but it had a ton of really, really, really good stuff from both AAA and indie. Yeah. Really rich year. Hard game, hard year to keep up with. We'll see. I mean, 2020 sounds like it's going to be the same. Although Nintendo's a little more vague on that front, but
I love it. I love that so much because you know they're sitting on a direct right now, and they're just trying to figure out when to fire it off.
It'll be January. They always do a January direct, so we'll find out soon enough.
They're waiting for those final Switch sales of the holiday, and then they're like, "Oh, by the way, good choice buying because here's what's coming."
Okay, guys, biggest what if before the podcast ends? Think about this until next week. What if Nintendo has a direct, like, I don't know, early in the year, they announce that Breath of the Wild 2, it's going to get released on the anniversary of the Switch, which is, I believe, March?
March 3rd?
Yeah.
No way. Competing with Animal Crossing? That's cannibalizing sales already. No way.
Okay, maybe not. But I really do think that, I think what they're going to do, and we'll see, I think that they're going to release a big game, if it's Mario or Zelda, before the next-gen consoles come out. Because I think what's going to happen is a lot of people are going to be buying Switches this year, because they don't want to buy a PS4 or an Xbox, because there's a new Xbox, new PlayStation on the way. So if anyone wants to buy a console this year, like, I know a lot of my friends are saying this, they're like, yeah, I'm just going to buy a Switch, because I don't want to, like, buy a PS4 and Xbox One, and then the new PS5 comes out, or Xbox One Series X, whatever it's called. So it's like, I'm finally going to buy a Switch. I have a feeling that Switch is going to have a really good year.
Oh, yeah. They've kept the momentum since launch incredibly well with a super stellar exclusive every 3 months or so with great, great consistency. So I can't wait to see what happens. I can't wait to see what game they use to undercut the... They won't actually change sales, but it'll definitely divert some attention when they launch some big AAA Zelda or Mario Odyssey 2 or something. It'll be fun to see, but that'll be for next year. For now, why don't we go ahead and wrap up the episode? Thank you both for being here, for talking games with me. Rick, where can we find you online?
You can find me running the official Twitter account for Goomba Stomp, which is Goomba Stomp, and of course on GoombaStomp.com. Do check out our many, many lists, the best movies of the year, the best movies of the decade, the best TV shows of the year, the best TV shows of the decade, the best indie games, the best Nintendo characters, the best video games, the best of the best, the best of everything over at GoombaStomp.com.
Yeah, and again, just because we talked about this list of the games of the year, go read all those little excerpts. It gives a really, really great insight into why those games deserve their position and might kind of skew your position on a particular title in a different way, even if you've played it. It's definitely written really well. Patrick, where can we find you?
On GoombaStomp.com, of course, writing about games. I actually finished my review for The Tourist, which we talked about last week, which I was pretty positive on last week. I finished positive, and had I actually played this game earlier in the year, it would have for sure been on my best games of the year list, and definitely on my would have been one of the best indie games of the year list. Pretty high on The Tourist. You can go to my review and read why. You can also find me on Twitter at Sorted Cinema. Talk movies, Star Wars coming out. Tweet something Star Wars at me.
It is good that we are not recording next week because of the holiday. Because otherwise, I would be guaranteed to be here an additional hour talking Star Wars with Patrick after the show. Guaranteed. Happened every single Star Wars movie so far. And there's no doubt in my mind that it would happen. Oh, man, Patrick, I don't know how to feel. I'll hold all reservations until I see the thing. But, man, to quote a certain smuggler, I've got a bad feeling about this. Anyway, I'm Tim Mason. You can find me at The Freemason, M-A-I-S-O-N, on Twitter. Check out my other show, Game Boys, all about co-op and multiplayer, where we just talked about the Game Awards as well, and mostly just talked about Xbox a lot, how excited we are. It's going to be a big year. So that means you have to stay tuned to Goomba Stomp, see everything that's happening and how we're responding to it, and get all those critical insights as things are announced or coming out. Seriously, go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Do drop us a rating and a review. Opens up doors, helps us get codes so that we can afford to keep doing this for your listening pleasure and for our entertainment. Thank you again for listening. We hope you enjoyed this very special Game of the Year edition of the show, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Have a good one.
You all should know, I am not about to go easy on you today.
As long as we can pull off the win, doesn't matter how.
Our victory must be absolute, no matter what it means.